you know, you talked about the citizen data scientist.
Yeah, yeah, from Gartner.
So, mm-hmm. So how do we identify kind of, are there inherent qualities somebody might have? Maybe they don't, they're not steeped in a particular methodology or skill set yet, but they've got the capacity for it.
Sure. So we can unpack all of that. And I want to actually, so you brought up Gartner Group's idea mm-hmm. of this citizen data scientist. And yeah. I took my phone out to make sure that we had the official definition of it. So Gartner Group defines yeah. a citizen data scientist as a person who creates or generates models that use advanced diagnostic analytics or predictive and prescriptive capabilities, but whose primary job function is outside the field of statistics and analytics, right? So again,
yeah.
people can be the math nerds, but they yeah. don't have to be. We yeah. can all play in this. And I, as we talked about earlier today, as you're bringing up, we can all be really good citizen data scientists, right? Mm-hmm. Because we can come up with good questions and hypotheses yeah. and then help take the analytical output into the organization to get action done. And part of that, just to touch on, is that, and this is actually from the Gartner Group website, Gartner also says, you know, the reason why we can do that and be successful there is because we can outsource either or insource to another group within our organization or outsource to a person or a platform, because there are lots
sure.
of analytics platforms that are available now and data science platforms that are available now. But Gartner says more than 40% of data science tasks will be automated by next year, by 2020.
Wow.
And so that's going to increase the productivity and broader usage of data and analytics by citizen data scientists, because we're not going to need to have,
yeah.
we don't have to be as numerate
yeah.
as perhaps we may think. We can leverage these other kind of modalities. And so that being said, how can we take a look at what are the skills or competencies and capabilities? Well, the first thing is what we've been talking about. What are we trying to do?
Yeah.
Right? So as learning leaders, there's a difference between building an analytics practice and applying analytics to a project.
Mm.
And we could do both, again,
yep.
in parallel.
Yep.
But what are we doing? Because then that's going to inform what team members do we
yeah.
need on the team to
yeah.
do either one of those things. And we're probably going to be doing both in parallel, get started on a project, because people need to have that experience, our
yeah.
team included, ourselves included. We need to go through the experience together. So how do we have a project that's small in scope, mm-hmm. less than 90 days,
mm-hmm.
something that's got kind of a quick hit? It's meaningful, like
yeah.
there's some impact on the other end. And we can do a quadrant, you know, we can put
sure.
together a little quadrant that says, okay, where's kind of the low hanging fruit,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Where are things that are going to be low cost,
yeah.
not
impact
a lot of effort,
cost,
but
yeah.
have some, yeah, but have some kind of like, you know, impact to it. And we can kind of map a couple of those things out, come together as a team and as leadership and say, okay, let's start there. And then meanwhile, take a look at that longer roadmap of 2-year run.
Mm-hmm.
in building an analytics practice within mm-hmm. the organization, within the L&D function. That's a 2-year roadmap. So if you've got mini roadmap, longer roadmap. So mini roadmap, this is going to give you an opportunity now as a leader too to kind of see where people are at.
Yeah.
Right? This is going to, you're going to have some idea. There are some tools and certainly some capability frameworks that we can use in order to really assess people's skills
mm-hmm.
in different roles that are necessary on the team. But now you're going to find out who's good at collecting,
yeah.
who's good at identifying the questions, who's good at facilitating the conversation
mm-hmm.
with your stakeholders to draw those questions out, refine them, better
mm-hmm.
articulate them. Who's good at the math? Who's
mm-hmm.
good at the statistics? Who's good at the data science side? Who resonates with
mm-hmm.
that, right? Who's good at building the algorithms? Who's good at doing the, you know, figuring out what are the different analytical approaches in order to apply in that particular situation? And then who's good at then taking that analytical output and championing that in the organization to help people learn? Because this is new for many people throughout the organization, of course us included, how to make better decisions based on data,
mm-hmm.
right? How to help people trust, how to help people be informed, how to help people not be so scared necessarily of this stuff that's being, you know, created oftentimes by the machines, often by AI-driven platforms, but how do we help them socialize and then drive action, right? Because again, we're not done with an analytics project until we've taken all the way, we've moved data to insights and insights to action. So there's that piece. And then there's also a piece, so I had the privilege of actually working with the Learning and Performance Institute based out of London. There was a global steering committee that we all got together last year. About this time last year was when we started the project, and we all volunteered our time, and we worked with LPI in order to create a new capability map that actually identifies the capability areas for the modern learning department. And analytics is one of the big capability areas. Technology is another big capability area. And I'm really proud that I led both of those working groups.
Cool.
So what I mean by that is we had working groups together, different sectors, different industries represented. As a matter of fact, Brandon Carson, who was the summit speaker last year, was on my technology working group. I asked Brandon to join us because of, you know, of course, his insights and experiences. And so we, not only from our own experiences, but data that we gathered individually for our capability areas and collectively as a steering committee, came together and said, well, here are the capability areas, here's what we should name them. Here's, and the capability area in that map, by the way, is not called learning analytics, it's called data analytics.
Really?
And again, very deliberate and intentional in the name to be like, hey guys,
it's the same.
It's the same. We need to have an understanding that it's the same in this, but it's in an application. We have the domain knowledge and the learning science and those pieces that help us use it through this lens, but the methodology is the same. Exactly. And then we defined the capabilities and then the skills and the competency statements that are actually in the map. And the reason why many of us, myself included, volunteered our time to do it is because that assessment is free to everybody around the world. And so if people such as yourself, anybody watching this, want to be able to use a tool to do an assessment or have their team individually go ahead and assess themselves, what'll happen is it'll assess them against the capability map. And then the online system, you can just go out to the LPI's, if you just Google LPI capability map, and we also had it in the handouts today, you can take the free assessment online and it'll create a personal competency profile report that gives you your baseline. And then also kind of shows you like, okay, well, you're here and here's where else you could go. And then now as a learning leader, you can sit down with your team and say, okay, we're going to work on your independent or individual development plan, and we're going to use this as one input mechanism.
That's
right? It's not
awesome.
Going to be everything. And then you as a learning leader can also take a look at now across your team, you know, maybe there's 80% of them that need better use of data visualization or storytelling or whatever it is. Now you can make a decision on how to invest in the team that it's going to give you the most bang for your buck in helping the entire team move forward, because it's a common gap
that is
in that particular area.
That is excellent. I'm going to for sure go check out that tool.
Cool. There's one other thing that I wanted to bring up real quick too, and we had it in the handouts, and I'm sure as part of the video we can make I'm happy to make the PDF file of the handouts available. But I also had the privilege of IEEE, the software engineering consortium, actually created a role a couple of years ago called a learning engineer. And they said, okay, well, if we in learning looked at learning through the eyes of an engineer, how would that be different than how we have historically done it? Which I thought was great, because I created the learning systems engineering framework for the same reason. I'm a daughter of an engineer a few years ago, in order to be able to do just that. Because again, engineers look at failure, they look at input, they look at throughput, they look at output. This is the perspective that we in L&D, this is one of the mindsets, one of the new mindsets that we need to adopt. And so IEEE created this learning engineer, and so we just had a conference in Arlington, Virginia, just this past May, for the community to come together for the first time and really start to put some momentum behind what do we want this thing to be? What do we think it needs to be? What is this role? What is this learning engineering practice? How does that fit? And so what we've come to so far, and there's a, I think it's a cool little infographic, because there was somebody who sketch noted it and I gave them credit in the handout. But part of the conversation is now captured in an infographic based on a sketch note that came out directly from that meeting that we had in Arlington, which was the first gathering ever of all of us to have the conversation, and it basically says, well, a learning engineer is somebody who knows the learning side of it, knows the business acumen side of it, and then also knows the engineering side of it, which would be artificial intelligence, data, analytics. So now, where do we wrap our heads around the instructional piece, the learning sciences, the learning theory, the business acumen, and also all of the technology and technical pieces that are coming into play? So we're going to have a different scale. There might be some learning engineers that at least have an appreciation for the analytical algorithms and artificial intelligence. They're aware, but maybe are not get your geek on deep into that particular area. And we've got others on that spectrum who are, but it all becomes part of that, kind of part of that tool set. So I really wanted to make sure that we had representation today on some of the latest and greatest research that's global, that's out there, to say, okay, this is how things are kind of shaping up, and who do we need to become?